bless you.
Madam Clerk, you ready? You would please, if you're able to stand, we'll call this meeting to order and the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before the invocation, the preamble to the Constitution of the State of Missouri. We, the people of Missouri, with profound reverence for the supreme ruler of the universe and grateful for his goodness, do establish this Constitution for the better government of the state. Ed Martin.
Good evening. Please join me in prayer. Our most gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for another beautiful day in the Ozarks. I ask you to join us in this meeting tonight and be present with us as we do the work of the city, that everything we do tonight would be honoring and glorifying to you. Father, we thank you tonight also for our employees, 200-plus examples like Harold that will be recognized tonight that care for our employees in-house, plus those that we serve. Father, be with this board tonight. Thank you for each one of them for their time and their service. And we pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Madam Clerk, will you do a roll call, please?
McConnell.
Here.
Klontz.
Here.
Simmons.
Here.
Akers.
Here.
Skaines.
Here.
Milton.
Here.
Castellan.
Here.
Your Honor, you have a quorum.
Thank you. Special tonight, an award recognition. I ask Alderman Larry Milton to make a presentation to Harold Clemens.
Larry Milton, It is my privilege to present our City of Branson Employee of the Month for January 2020, Harold Clements, Police Commission Supervisor. Harold always thinks of the needs of those he supervises before his own. When the police department is running short on personnel, he will substitute for them without hesitation. He demonstrated true service and leadership when one of the dispatchers was recently involved in a car wreck. Harold drove to the scene of the accident in another county and took the dispatcher home. Harold is a great advocate for the dispatchers and makes certain the police communication department runs smoothly. His service to the City of Branson is unparalleled, and through his service, he has made Branson a safer place to live. On behalf of the Mayor, Board of Aldermen, City Administrator, and City Staff, it is my honor to present this plaque naming Harold Clements as the City of Branson January 2020 Employee of the Month. Congratulations. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Congratulations, Harold.
I guess no speech.
Yes, it is, bud.
Ready for the public comment section. In order to give everyone a chance to speak tonight, I would like to ask you all who are speaking on an item that you keep your comments as succinct as possible to the topic and as short as possible. You will be allowed to only speak once on an item, and please do not repeat after what has already been said by another speaker. Once public discussion has ended on the item and the board starts their discussion, there will be no additional comments taken from the audience. However, if a Board of Aldermen wishes to bring someone forward for a point of clarification, they can address the chair of the meeting. Please remember to speak into the mic, state your name and address for the record. Thank you, and please seek to stay within the five-minute guideline. Madam Clerk, do we have anyone signed up for speaking?
Our first speaker tonight is Marshall Howden.
Hello.
Marshall Howden, 106 Rose O'Neill. I wanted to rise this evening to express a philosophical point on the distinction between two very important concepts, marketing versus messaging. Now, the reason I would bring this up is very clear. It is in reference to the Music and Theater Commission proposal. Again, I have given many speeches on that proposal, and from the information that has been relayed to me, this board wants to wait until the study from the chamber is released sometime in April or May to revisit that topic, and I am perfectly at peace with that. But I wanted to put a pin in my proposal with this concept. My position is different than some in that I do believe marketing can have an impact on the future of that industry. So, under the umbrella of marketing, I can understand wanting to bring together a coalition of, say, the three most influential industries in this town to review how our marketing dollars are being used. But here is the ultimate reason that I believe there needs to be a music and theater commission to solely represent the interests of that industry. Because messaging is different from marketing. Marketing is the result of the tax dollars that we contract with the entity this board selects. Messaging would be the signal this board could send if it instituted something like this commission. Marketing includes the television ads for Branson that people see around the Midwest. Messaging is when the Springfield News Leader does a story about the rift between the entertainers and City Hall. Unfortunately, marketing has been hashtag not your grandma's Branson. Messaging has been 60 Minutes calling us the entertainment capital of the universe. Please, let's not forget the messaging side of it. That's my message. Thank you.
Thank you, Marshall. Madam Clerk, anyone else?
Gary Groman.
Gary Groman, 350 South Wildwood Drive, apartment D10, Branson, Missouri. After a December 10th meeting, Alderman Milton attempted to ask me a question regarding my comments during the public comment period of the meeting. Those comments related to concerns about the city attorney's position that the mayor had the authority to change an alderman's abstaining on a vote to a no vote. The mayor, in what I believe was a violation of proper decorum and city ordinance, interrupted Alderman Milton, saying, "We do not ask questions until all the speakers are finished. That's why I read the thing to start with, Larry." The thing referred to and upon which the mayor appears to base his interruption as relates to this presentation said, "You'll be allowed to speak only once on an item. Please do not repeat what has already been said by another speaker. Once the public discussion has ended on an item, the board starts their discussion." As the exchange between the surprised alderman and mayor continued, Milton pointed out that this was a big change from the way the public comment period had been done in the past. He asked, "For clarity, what were you saying, that after everybody has spoken, then we ask questions?" Akers replied, "Yes, that's right. Then it's our turn." The mayor also said, "This is the same document that I have read at every meeting that we have had where we have had a group of people. I haven't changed it a bit. This was provided by our city clerk." Outside of the fact that the mayor's announced policy for the public comment period of the meeting appears to be in violation of subsection 2-70C of the Branson Municipal Code governing the conduct of the public comment portion of the meeting, the tapes of the public comment periods from April 2019 through the first meeting of 2019 shows that the mayor read no such statement, if at all, before the vast majority of public comments period involved in those meetings. This, whether the public comment period included one person or a group of people, that makes his contention that he hasn't changed it a bit as meaningless as the portion of his statement saying that this is the same document that I have read at every meeting that we have had where we've had a group of people. Particularly abhorrible to me was the mayor's attempt, I believe, to distort the truth by using information out of context for his own purposes by throwing the city clerk under the bus. She is one of the finest and most professional women I know, and the city is blessed to have her. Although I can picture her giving the mayor that precise verbiage for use in some other part of the meeting, such as the regular agenda portion, I will bet my reputation on the fact that she never gave the mayor that verbiage for use as an introduction to the public comment portion of the meeting. Personally, I believe that the mayor misused that verbiage for his own purposes and what I believe was a vain attempt to control and muzzle the alderman's ability to interact with the public during the public comment period of the meeting. I would also point out that although I did not mention the fact that I am a retired attorney or represent myself as attorney, the city attorney, with I presume the blessing of senior city staff and using city resources, made inquiries as to my registration and disciplinary status with the Illinois Bar Association through another attorney, I believe in Illinois. He then sent an email out about the results to the board and senior staff. For what legitimate purpose was such action taken? When I requested information on the situation through the Freedom of Information request, I received a copy of the email. It was just a black space with all the information redacted, including my name. What message does this action by the city send out to our residents and businesses about interacting with the city and what to expect? To this citizen and voter, it's nothing related to honor, integrity, transparency, or trust. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grumman. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Grumman. Thank you. We will get through all the speakers that are going to speak tonight, and then we'll come back. If you want to make a note and bring him back up, we can, as I read when we started.
That's all of our speakers tonight.
All right. Would you like to invite him back?
I'm not sure you're supposed to.
Larry, would you like to invite him back?
Yes, please.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, sir.
Gary, have you said that in the past, from Mayor Meadows, I'm forgetting my mayors.
What, the past mayors?
Lou Schaefer.
Harold Casey?
No, I don't know back that far. But Karen and
Preston.
Rayanne.
That asking these questions, this new procedure of everybody sitting down and then calling them back up. I only recall one time when Karen Best was mayor that there was a line out the door of people wanting to speak, and it was on some controversial issue. And during that one meeting, she said that we were going to let everybody speak and then bring them back up to ask questions. Do you recall any other meetings where, because I'm thinking there's like 30 years of precedent.
Actually, no, including this mayor. We had, when we had the sports people appear, they must have had 15 to 20 people, and they all came in and you asked questions as they went along. I think Bob Simmons, Kevin McConnell, I'm drawing a blank. Oh, Bill could testify that this is a change from the way we have been doing it. It's a change from the way the city ordinance reads. City ordinance says you get 5 minutes. The mayor or alderman may interrupt during that 5 minutes, and your time is extended. Well, obviously, that can only happen. You can only get extended time if somebody interrupts. Then there's a second part where the mayor, alderman, and city staff can ask questions of the respondent. That's limited to 5 minutes. No, I've never seen anything like this. Matter of fact, to me, it is almost inconceivable if the mayor can violate city ordinance with impunity and everybody else has to follow the rules. I just don't understand it. Yeah, that's what I told you.
Thank you, Gary.
That it? Were you
I've got a question for Marshall also. I wanted to address one of Marshall's statements.
Yes, Marshall.
Hey. I believe I heard you say that this board intention was to wait until the show study was done in April before we took action.
On the specific music and theater commission proposal that's at least the information that has been relayed to me by the city administrator. Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, I was unaware of that. I know that here shortly we want to start addressing the, or I'd like to see us start addressing the CVB contract.
Sure.
But as far as that...
And Alderman, that's the reason why I wanted, I've given plenty of speeches, that's the reason I wanted to bring that up once again. I just wanted to kind of keep everyone, you know, not that I've dropped it or anything like that, but that just I'm kind of following, you know, the instructions that I've been given, but wanted to kind of keep it in the forefront of everyone's mind. That's the reason I brought that up, so.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Any other? As we get ready to go into the main agenda, it is my responsibility as mayor under state law to take care of the ordinances of our city and the state law relating to our city are compiled that are compiled with. Under one of our ordinances, Branson Municipal Code 2-64, I am tasked with the responsibility of being the presiding officer of the board and am required to preserve strict order and decorum of the meetings. The citizens of Branson elected us to make decisions on policy matters, and we make those decisions by voting. We are obligated to vote unless a conflict of interest prevents us from doing so. The common law of the state of Missouri supports this. Although I cannot force any member of the board to cast a vote, and no member can be required to cast a vote, I do have the ability to control the order and decorum of these meetings. As a result, I'm announcing under my authority to preserve order and decorum of these meetings that any abstention by any member of the board during this meeting will be recast as a no vote. Ready to go into...
Was that the discussion?
No, it's statement.
Oh, I'm sorry, statement, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a statement.
All right.
We're ready to go to the items on the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that the audience would like pulled down? Any item the board would like pulled down? Madam Clerk, would you please read the items on the current consent agenda?
Your Honor, the items on the consent agenda are as follows. Approval of the Board of Aldermen minutes of the December 4th, 2019 special meeting and of the December 10th, 2019 regular meeting. Acknowledge receipt of minutes of the Advisory Park Board meeting of October 15th, 2019, Budget and Finance Committee and Capital Improvement Committee meeting of October 31st, 2019. Final reading of Bill Number 5745, an ordinance approving amendments to the City of Branson's Human Resources Manual. Final reading of Bill Number 5750, an ordinance approving high-density residential HDR zoning for the property located at 115 Lakefront Drive, Branson, Missouri. Final reading of Bill Number 5751, an ordinance approving high-density residential HDR zoning for the property located at 125 Lakefront Drive, Branson, Missouri. Final reading of Bill Number 5752, an ordinance approving high-density residential HDR zoning for the property located at 111 Chateau Cove Drive, Branson, Missouri. Final reading of Bill Number 5753, an ordinance approving high-density residential HDR zoning for the property located at 250 Chateau Cove Drive, Branson, Missouri. Final reading of Bill Number 5757, an ordinance approving the an ordinance authorizing agreement with the Conservation Commission of the State of Missouri for water main easements on the Ruth and Paul Henning Conservation property and authorizing mayor to execute the contract. Final reading of Bill Number 5758, an ordinance accepting the proposal of Kirk's Excavation Incorporated for a sanitary sewer main extension in the area of Harmony Lane and authorizing mayor to execute the contract. Final reading of Bill Number 5760, an ordinance approving an agreement between Empire District, a Liberty Utilities Company, and the City of Branson for relocation costs of streetlight facilities relating to the Gretna Road median island removal, and authorizing mayor to execute the contract. Final reading of Bill Number 5761, an ordinance approving the intergovernmental cooperative agreement with the City of Kimberling City, Missouri Police Department, pertaining to the donation of Taser X26 equipment and authorizing the mayor to execute the contract. Final reading of Bill Number 5762, an ordinance accepting the proposal of Ace Pipe Cleaning for sanitary sewer system improvements and authorizing the mayor to execute the contract. Final reading of Bill Number 5763, an ordinance accepting the proposal of Technology International Incorporated for the purchase of a waste feed grinder for the Cooper Creek Wastewater Treatment Plant and authorizing the mayor to execute the contract. Final reading of Bill Number 5764, an ordinance amending Chapter 18 of the Branson Municipal Code pertaining to electrical provisions within the 2018 International Residential Code. Your Honor, that concludes the reading of the consent agenda.
The floor is open for a motion approving all items on the consent agenda.
So move.
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second's been made. Please vote on the consent agenda. Shows yes vote and one abstention. Can I have clarification on the abstention, please?
Rick wasn't here. Yeah.
Kevin McConnell, yes. Larry Milton, yes. Brian Klontz, yes. Rick Castellan, abstain. Bill Skanes, yes. Bob Simmons, yes. Mr. Castellan, can I have an explanation?
I wasn't here.
Okay. Seems like a valid abstention. So it passes 5-1. Five with one abstention. Yes. Okay, item 15 is a discussion of the legal opinion on the bear of the mayor recasting abstentions. I believe that Chris Lebeck is going to lead the discussion.
Excuse me. Good evening, Mayor, members of the board. If you all recall, at the last full board meeting in December, we had a discussion, a rather heated discussion, concerning the mayor's ability to recast abstentions as in the negative as no votes. The initial request and the conversation was initiated by Mr. Groman, who's here in the audience. Ms. Alderman McConnell requested that we seek an attorney general's opinion. And as the board recalls, that's impermissible under state statute. So then the question was raised by Alderman Milton to seek a second opinion, like we would with any type of medical opinion. Alderman Simmons pointed out that we should probably put this formally on an agenda so that we could approach it with utmost transparency. So what we have here today is we have a placeholder. Between that board meeting and today, I reached out to our outside counsel, that's Mr. Jim Meadows. He's a partner at Cuttack Rock. He's somebody we have used for a number of years, dating back to the Coverdale days with that litigation. And I asked him the very same question that was presented on that date. And he is here to present his findings and to provide the board a second opinion on that matter. I'll make it clear that I don't know what that opinion is going to be that he has formalized to present to the board today. So again, trying to keep this as blind as possible for you all. So he is here in the audience. He's sitting behind Mr. Hornicle, and with the board's willingness and the presiding officer's willingness, he'd come forward and provide his legal opinion on this matter.
First question is, anyone in the audience wishing to speak regarding this matter? Any alderman wishing to speak regarding this matter?
Yes, Mayor.
Yeah. The only comment I would make, generally speaking, about this issue, and again, we've all done a fair amount of research. I also have received a second opinion. I would just caution that the second opinion that I received from someone with a lot more, with all due respect, a lot more municipal experience than we have in staff, said clearly under 2.8 that it's under Robert's Rules of Orders and you cannot change an abstention to a no. An abstention is just that, an abstention. So I'll leave it at that. I'm not an attorney, but that's what the second opinion that I received said. So I'll certainly be anxious to hear what we hear tonight. Thank you.
Any other? Call Mr. Meadows to the.
Meadows, is that right?
Yes, sir. Meadows, M-E-A-D-O-S.
M-E-A-D-O-W-S.
There you go, Mr. W. Thank you, Mayor, Alderman. I do have a copy of this opinion in written form for you all. I'm going to provide it to Ms. Westfall so she can distribute it to you all. Addressed to Mr. Lebeck as city attorney, but I have prepared 12 copies of it for you. So I'll go ahead and hand it to Ms. Westfall. So while Ms. Westfall is passing that out to you, I'll describe the procedure we followed this opinion by, what our findings was, and then be happy to discuss them with you in greater detail. If you want to have someone else as a third party look at it, if you want to review the cases yourself, you'll find that the cases and statutes I mentioned are outlined in the letter, so we can go through it in that detail. The procedure we use for these type of opinion letters, and I have done two or three of these over the past 10 years for the city on various other issues, is the same. Whoever's then city attorney will call me, pose what the questions are, provide me the context of the ordinance in question, if there is an ordinance in question, and then ask us to develop our opinion. We do not have a copy of their research. We do not have a copy of which direction they want it to come out. And then I will assign it, to save you all money, to one of our younger associates to do some research on, and then I will double check their research and put it in a formal written opinion. In this case, there was no underlying ordinance in question that was provided to us. I did have access to the City of Branson ordinances as we went through this, and I think Alderman McConnell points out what I think is one of the important ordinances here, and that's Ordinance 280. That makes Robert's Rules of Order your presiding governing procedure in handling your meetings. That is a document I either fortunately or unfortunately have some experience with over the years as well. But that being said, we need to look at the larger context here. Missouri adopted the common law when it became a state. And under common law, abstentions were always traditionally treated as votes in the affirmative. That had been the common law rule for hundreds of years. In 1978, the Missouri Court of Appeals ruled that that did not stand for municipal governments. And their reasoning is important here. They said that a specific statute sets the number of votes that have to be achieved to reach a passage of an ordinance, in this case, 4. So the Court of Appeals ruled that because there is a specific number of yes votes that are needed for a passage, you could not treat abstentions as a yes. Now, unfortunate for us, the Court of Appeals did not grace us with answering the rest of the question. If we can't treat abstentions as yes, what do we do with them? They were silent on that in the opinion. Later case law, including a 1985 case that you'll see I've cited in there, did not add any details to it. So what we're left is we have to figure it out by reference to Robert's Rules of Order and to how other states have approached this issue. Now, most states have dealt with it affirmatively by statute. Missouri has not. That is one of the detriments we have here, is the legislature has not graced us with direct understanding. When we turn to Robert's Rules of Order, it does not say that in most cases the mayor can treat an abstention as a no vote. What it actually says is there are certain cases where you can, and it goes through a list of exceptions. Well, here's the problem. It doesn't fit either way, this scenario. So that turns us to the law of other states. And other states have ruled, two of them at least, and there's been some others that we've been able to find at a lower court level, that abstentions may be treated as a no vote because of the reason of what they do. They are a vote against the passage of the ordinance when 4 votes are required. When an affirmative vote is required, an abstention has the same effect as a no and may be treated as a no. A good example of this is contained in the letter. In that case, a sheriff was appointed by a municipal corporation. That municipal corporation had 4 votes to employ the sheriff, it had three votes to employ the sheriff, 2 votes against, and there were abstentions. In that case, the abstention was treated as a no vote, and the presiding officer, the mayor, was able to cast the tiebreaker. That is the most analogous case to the situation we have here. So, it is very likely that the mayor does have the authority to either treat an abstention as a no vote or to recast it as a no vote. The other option, frankly, is that the Missouri Court of Appeals, if faced with this situation, might reconsider its 1978 opinion and treat the abstentions as yeses. Under either case, the abstention is not treated as something separate, but is treated as either a no or a yes. So in this case, I do think there is good argument and good law supporting the idea that the mayor can either recast those as no's or treat them as cast as no's to break the tie. Now, the additional question we ran into, and frankly, I was hesitant to bring it up, but I think you all need to be aware of it. There is case law suggesting, under Missouri law, an affirmative duty for members of a governing board to vote. It is the duty of those governing members to cast their vote unless there is some valid reason. There is case law in Missouri that if you fail to exercise your duty as an elected public official, that that individual can be removed from office. Now, of course, nothing defines by how often that has to occur, but it is treated the same as missing a series of meetings. I think some of the most instructive case law on this is the case I mentioned involving the sheriff that occurred from the Illinois Supreme Court, and then the case law from Missouri dealing with the duty and removal of public officials. Now, when I talk about the removal of public officials, we don't go into the process to do that, but I will say that is a difficult process involving a court hearing, so that is not something that happens automatically one way or the other. That is something that would have to be fully vetted before the legal system, with the legal system to consider each people's approach on that and whether the level of abstentions rose to the same as missing meetings or violating duty. And I don't know the context here, so I can't really say whether, you know, what has occurred in this case is such as would merit removal. I can only tell you that there is a risk of that under the case law, and that is something that everyone should bear in mind when deciding whether they wish to abstain or not from a particular vote. I understand you all may have questions. I am happy to answer those. I'm not sure the proper procedure on that, Mr. Liebeck.
That'll be up to the mayor, Mr. Okay. Meadows.
I'm available, or I can leave.
Okay. Are there any questions from the Board of Aldermen?
And Mr. Mayor, can I please offer three clarifying points to Mr.
Okay.
Meadows?
Sure.
Number one, he made the comment that in previous opportunities to present a letter of this nature, that he did his own independent research. In this circumstance, I did provide you my opinion, did I not?
I think you told me the direction you thought it was, but you didn't provide me any case law, as I recall. Maybe you did, but I don't remember relying on it. So we did our own research on that.
And then the second question I have, and this was an issue that was brought up at the previous board meeting, was that there was an attorney general opinion out there that was relied on heavily. Can you explain some context behind that?
Sure. Attorney general support opinions are just that. They are the opinion of the then incumbent attorney general. They have no standing in court other than the opinion of any other attorney. And in this case, when you read the attorney general's opinion, they go well beyond what the case law says. They were expressing the view of the office holder at that time. That was 1981, and frankly, we have no reason to know if that's the same view Attorney General Smith would take today, and it has courts routinely ignore the attorney general's opinions, and the court would have to draw its own conclusion on those issues.
And then the final comment, Mr. Meadows, this is the first time you presented this to me, correct, today?
Is that the first time I've presented that to you? Yes. That letter was created today.
Thank you.
Any questions from the Board of Aldermen?
I just have one. Excuse me.
Still of course.
Trying to get over all this junk. I don't have the radio voice anymore. Normally, an abstention would be utilized when there was a conflict of interest, personal or professional, by blood, marriage, or adoption. Is that, am I right on? That's the way we've always treated them at the state.
Correct, and there's actually statutes set out by the state that provide that you are supposed to abstain when there is a conflict of interest. Typically, a governmental body adopts a conflict of interest policy. I have served on the library board up in Christian County. We have, just as an example, we have adopted a conflict of interest policy that provides that. I have not looked to be certain, but I believe Branson has such a conflict of interest policy. Clerk Westfall is shaking her head yes. They have been promulgated, and all of us have been encouraged to adopt them over the years.
Thank you.
Mayor, question?
Yes.
Mayor? Okay. So just so I'm on the right page here with you guys, under, I just want to understand what you just said. Under Municipal Code 2.80, we talk about Robert's Rules of Order. What I understand a lot of municipalities are doing is they're actually crafting their own ordinance to cover things like this that we have not covered. And so in a lot of my research, and I don't pretend to be an attorney, and I'm not giving legal advice, but it's the importance of municipalities to come up with ordinance so that they're not in sort of this murky water. 2.80 says we use Robert's Rules of Order. You just said Robert's Rules of Order doesn't really cover this, so we start looking at other states. I just want to make sure that's what you said.
Robert's Rules provides that there are certain circumstances where abstentions may be treated as either a no or a yes. It does not deal with the situation where it is done to achieve a certain political or strategic outcome on a particular ordinance. So that does limit it. We then have to see, and basically what we're performing is an analysis of what we believe a court would do if faced with this situation. The judicial philosophy of the state of Missouri, like all U.S. states except Louisiana, is what's called common law. Common law relies on longstanding case law and judicial theory and a concept of stare decisis. You are supposed to let decisions from elsewhere govern that context if possible. They don't have to, but they encourage it. So when we don't find clear Missouri law on it, we have to take an analysis and basically try to stand in the shoes of the judge. What would we do if we were the judge in that situation? The typical approach is to analyze, first, what is the purpose of the rule? Second, what have other states and jurisdictions done? So that's why we turn to other states. That's also why we turn to the purposes behind the law. There is Missouri case law that says aldermen have a duty to vote, and allowing abstentions to not count as no's or to not count for anything would deny that underlying purpose of the law. Could a court decide differently? Yes. It is my reasoned and researched opinion that this is the most likely way that it would decide, but if any of you have ever been involved in litigation, judges can do all kinds of things, and that's one of the things we learn over the years.
Thank you for your opinion.
Any other questions?
I'm not an attorney either, so I appreciate the clarification. My understanding of Robert's Rules of Order, I thought it clearly stated that an abstention cannot be changed to a yes or no vote.
Robert's Rules of Order is much like the common law and the rest of the law. It will have a statement like that, and I will agree there is a statement that says generally abstentions do not count as yes or no's. But then it will list a whole host of exceptions and say other exceptions as necessary. So when you look deeply in Robert's Rules of Order, and you'll see in the letter I have cited to the sections that where Robert's Rules of Order provide for exceptions to that general rule. That is one of the unfortunate things about it. It is, you know, a book this thick, and only a lawyer could truly love it, typically. I'm one of the few people I know that's read through the thing a couple times, and I will tell you, even for me, it was dry reading.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
Is this where he offers to buy ribs for the group?
So at this point in time,
thank you all.
Thank you. This statement that I read, and the action I took what I believe is the proper action to be able to have a meeting that's got the proper decorum and that we actually vote and take care of business. And at this point in time, it appears that we will proceed like it's been set up. Alrighty. Ready to go into the next item, item number 16. Theater industry study update presented by Grant Sloan. I believe Grant's here, and he's the vice president of member engagement, Branson Lakes Area Chamber of Commerce and CVB.
Thanks for having me this evening. And I believe I've got a PowerPoint here. Well, again, thank you all for letting me provide this update. My name is Grant Sloan. I'm the Vice President of Member Engagement at the Branson Lakes Area Chamber of Commerce and CVB. And this evening I want to talk about really kind of how we got up to this point, what the Chamber of Commerce and partnership with the Branson Show Task Force have been working on for the past year and a half, currently where we're at with the theater industry study, how you can play an important role in that tonight or even just this week, and then ultimately where we're going later this year. And so again, want to really kind of start with this symbol that you've probably seen here, heard us talk about, and that's the 5 in 5 initiative, where we asked the business community in 2018 to identify the 5 big issues or 5 big challenges that need to be tackled over the next 5 years to continue growing our economy. And so we got that feedback through a number of avenues. First off, we started with focus groups. We met with the theater community. We met with the attractions community, lodging, nonprofits, Stone County, Indian Point, governance, where we spoke with community stakeholders and said, what are the 5 big areas that need to be addressed over the next 5 years? We then went a step further and had 2 open houses, one at the Chateau on the Lake, another at the Convention Center, where we went to the community at large and said, you know, if you weren't able to attend these focus groups or you would like to have your voice heard, please, you know, come in and chime in on this. And then ultimately put it out to social media to get feedback from that way as well. And so once all that feedback had been collected, these were the 5 areas that were identified again by the business community or leaders in the business community. Workforce development, far and away, seen as the biggest challenge, the need for a sustainable workforce. Highway 76 redevelopment amongst our main corridor. Theater industry health, strengthening this key driver of tourism in our economy. Proactive government, making sure that we are a friendly place to do business. And then shoulder season business, looking at strengthening soft parts during the traditional 9-month economy, and then ultimately with the goal of moving towards a year-round economy. And so in May of 2018, the Branson Lakes Area Chamber of Commerce and CVB Board of Directors approved roughly 20 strategies to move the needle in these 5 areas. And so this evening, I want to focus on theater industry health, and the theater industry study is one of the strategies approved by the Board of Directors to help strengthen the theater industry. And so these are the 3 strategies that were identified with a timeline to help strengthen the industry. Secure funding for market analysis, which is basically another way of saying secure funding for a theater industry study. Identification of new research. This is really expanding our sample size for the Branson Show Index. And the Branson Show Index, if you're unfamiliar with it, this is something that was done for years and then participation kind of wavered. And so that was relaunched in 2018, where we have the theater community voluntarily submitting data tied to ticket sales, tied to revenue, tied to number of performances, capacity as far as attendance at their shows. And so right now we have about 17 individuals who are participating in that. We would like to see a bigger sample size so that we can go beyond just tax data, so we can have a more accurate representation of what's happening in the theater community, with the hope of moving towards kind of like a STAR report, if you're familiar with that, with the lodging community. And then ultimately hiring of an industry consultant. This is something where bringing in someone to look at best practices, nothing that would be forced upon anyone in the theater community, but an asset that would be available to them. And so this is not being led by just chamber staff or chamber and CVB staff. This is being driven by volunteers in the community. And so I know these names are a little small, so if you'll indulge me, I want to read all of them. I feel like we have a pretty good representation of size of theaters, of types of shows, of various genres. And so the Branson Show Task Force, made up of 17 show owners and producers representing 26 shows in our market. Larry Wilhite with the Mansion Theater, Sheila Dutton with the Duttons, Dathan Atchison with Welk Resort Theater, Nick Gavell with Showboat, Lena Hughes with the Hughes Brothers, Jeannie Horton with Legends in Concert, Sight and Sound Theater represented by Cynthia Carson, Grand Country represented by Mike Patrick, Timothy Haygood, the Haygoods, Tom Brett, A Brett's Family Christmas, Luke Johnson with Johnson Strings, Brandon Mabe with the Bald Knobbers, Randy Brashears, Little Opry Theater, Jody Medeiros, All Hands on Deck, Ellen Peterson with the Petersons, Jeff Johnson with Shepherd of the Hills, Outdoor Theater, and then Billy Yates with his hit Songwriters and Around. And so again, they are the ones that are spearheading the efforts of seeing these strategies be executed, and that there's buy-in from the theater industry, because ultimately they're the ones that are affected by it. And so having their buy-in, their participation in this process has been absolutely huge over the last year and a half, 2 years. And so I want to talk about how they selected the group Sound Diplomacy, or this consultancy, to conduct this theater industry study. And so in March, the 17 members of the Branson Show Task Force approved the theater industry RFP. And the RFP had three areas of focus: analyzing the Branson market, dynamics within our own live music show community, looking at national trends within the live music show industry. And so this is analyzing like-minded markets that place an emphasis on live music as a driver of tourism, comparing and contrasting ourselves to those markets. And it's not just the nation, it can be across the world. And then ultimately looking at that information and looking at recommendations that can be used to strengthen the industry as a whole, industry or information that you all can use as elected leadership, information that can be used by individual business owners within the theater industry community. So models for best practices or models for success. And so again, that RFP was approved in March. In May, Sound Diplomacy was unanimously selected. What the show task force, what we saw, was that Sound Diplomacy really separated itself from some of the other consultancies that placed a bid on this, because their sole focus is live music show strategy, or live music strategy and economic impact. Where others may be looking at feasibility study, they have a history of working specifically on what we're looking at. And so they have worked in more than 30 different countries, 6 different continents. They've worked in destinations like New Orleans, Vancouver, Brisbane, Australia, San Francisco. They presented to the United Nations on more than one occasion on the significance of live music as a driver of really of culture and then also as tourism. And so absolutely understand the significance of respecting the heritage while also looking to the future. And so they were selected in May. In September, it was officially kicked off, the live music study, and really didn't start off super sexy, so to speak, because it starts with data collection. We're looking at really what information can be collected that's out there, and this can be everything from business licenses, number of shows in the market, number of theater seats, tax data collection, marketing strategy, talking with individuals in the market. So really looking at data collection that's out there, then they can also educate themselves on the history of Branson as well. But then ultimately you've got to go beyond that, as we know. The numbers only tell a certain portion of the story. While very important, you have to go beyond that. And so in October, Sound Diplomacy actually came to the Branson market to chat with industry stakeholders. I know many of you participated in that process. I appreciate that. They met with 9 different focus groups, 3 of which were specifically tied to the theater industry: theater performers that also operate theaters, and then just theater operators. They also met with governance groups, third-party ticket resellers, marketing professionals. They also saw 11 different shows while they were in town, ranging in different size and genre as well. So really, to come in and understand the market, to go beyond the data collection. And then ultimately, where we're currently at, bringing us kind of current day, so to speak, in December, the launch of 2 surveys. So they've collected data, they have now talked to industry stakeholders, and now wanting to go to the visitors at large, or the community at large, that maybe weren't able to participate in those focus groups. And so I believe in the last hour and a half or so, pass that survey link along to you. If the public at large would like to participate, that can be found on BransonChamber.com. But about a 10-minute survey to just kind of get the community's take on the theater industry, consumer behaviors, things of that nature. Well, apparently my slideshow's done. I can continue from here, but would really appreciate it if you all could take 10 minutes to participate in that. Whenever we look forward, once this is complete, the surveys have closed later on this week. That will be whenever you look at probably phase 1 is complete of the study, which is Branson analysis. From there, they'll move on to national analysis, going back to that conversation of analyzing the Branson market, comparing and contrasting us to like-minded destinations, and then ultimately using recommendations to strengthen this industry long-term. And as Marshall Howden had mentioned, looking second quarter of this year for the results of that study to be presented to the community at large. And so with that, I'll open it up to any questions.
Is there anyone in the audience that wished to speak to this matter? Any alderman wishing to speak to this matter?
Yeah, Yes, sir. I'd like to ask
Grant a question. Grant, thank you for that report. Utmost of our concern, as I've talked to, I think, just about everybody on this board, at the end of the year, through December, the theaters are down roughly $400,000 in tax collection, which significantly concerns us, because when I was on the tourism district, theaters and hotels and motels were basically right on the line with each other as far as tax collection. When you look at the tourism district receipts, as we all did a chance to look at, they're way up. And everybody was basically up, I think, but hotels and motels. It was 1.8%. Campgrounds way up. Overnight rentals way up. Are we going to get into that reason for that $400,000 drop? Because it seems to me like that's the bottom line. That's the essence of where we need to be in here. Is it ticket resellers? Or the theaters just giving the tickets away? It's hard to believe with as many people in town and revenues being up in Stone and Taney County that there's such a huge drop-off, and that's a concern to me. And this, my question would be to you, and Kevin and others may have this similar question. This $400,000 is upsetting.
So I can't speak to the current tax receipts, as you referred to, and as you talked about, some being up significantly with the theater community being down, and understanding that specifically for this year. I do think that what you've addressed there as far as understanding the dynamics within the live music show community that may be playing a factor in that, I do believe will be touched on, will be addressed. Can they speak to what we're seeing this year in particular? I can't say for sure. There may be more at play there, but I think this will talk about the dynamics within the live music show community that are playing a role in that.
Okay, thank you.
Point of clarification, Bill, with the data you're referring to, is that through November?
I believe it was. So the latest report that we have from finance.
It's not through the end of the year at this point in time. Larry?
Yeah, I think the numbers would be closer to 500,000 when we look at the end numbers. But the $400,000 that Bill was mentioning, to put that in perspective, that is $10 million in sales, right? People going to the shows. $10 million less this year than last year. That's a lot of money. And it's not just the $10 million that the city sees 4% of that, which is the $400,000 that we're referring to, but it trickles down, because when the theaters have that money, then they can increase their show production, they can pay for things, and how it trickles into our local economy, right? So it's not a $400,000 question, right? It's really a $10 million question. And I'm sure there are several factors that will contribute to that. We've heard all year long that how much of the role from the CVB and the marketing changes from the show industry is affecting that figure. Bill mentioned that campgrounds are up, and those are real small numbers, right? It's when we talk about such a large number being down, that's just plain significant. So I'll be anxious to see the results of that study. The only thing I would add is I've had a handful of people in the show industry mention that when we were doing the way the focus groups were set up, several didn't feel that they could share how they honestly felt, because they're sitting in a group of others, and some of them, you know, may affect their business or their relationships, and so the gathering the input from those different focus groups in a group setting might not have shown the true picture.
I'm hopeful, and I believe the show task force is hopeful, with the group that was reached out to amongst various focus groups, so to speak, various government sectors, that every opinion, or just about every opinion, tied to this, you know, very important issue has been expressed by someone. You know, we did make a point from Chamber and CVB staff to not be in the room during those focus groups. We wanted people to speak freely if they felt like they needed to say, you know, share their opinion on our organization. We didn't want to influence that. But in touching, you know, I think more than 60 community stakeholders through that process, we're very hopeful that those opinions have been shared, maybe not in that particular focus group, but another.
Thank you, Grant.
Any other questions? Alderman Simmons.
Grant, I did have the privilege of sitting in on one of those focus sessions, and it was rather enlightening. There was a tremendous amount of knowledge about the community in the session I was in. I don't recall, maybe 8 people, but really a tremendous amount of knowledge about Branson and the theater industry in that session. And if they didn't speak freely in it, I would hate to hear them speak freely because they certainly did share a great deal of information. It could have probably gone on another 2 hours if time had permitted, because everyone seemed anxious to get their information out there, and it was good information. I'm really looking forward to the results of this survey. Thank you.
Any other? Grant, thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Let's go on to item 17.
Excuse me.
Reading of Bill 5732. Madam Clerk.
Your Honor, this is the final reading of Bill Number 5732, an ordinance amending the adopted 2019 budget for the City of Branson to adjust monies for the Tourism and Capital Projects Funds. This bill was postponed on its final reading during the December 10, 2019 regular meeting. It is in need of a motion, second, and a vote.
Mayor, may I point of order here? I've recently been asked by at least one client to change my vote on underground utilities. I do indeed have a conflict. If I change my vote to satisfy a client, it's going to protect my business, but it's in opposition to what I deeply believe. If I don't change my vote, I believe it will hurt my business. This is a conflict in the truest sense of the word. Due to the obvious financial conflict of interest, I will be recusing myself, not abstaining, but recusing myself from any further discussion or voting on this measure.
Obviously, at this time, it would be a decision in regard to whether all of us have people that seek to influence us and make us change our decisions. Have you already left? It appears I have a decision to make in regard to whether I accept the abstention,
Your Honor,
or the excuse.
Your Honor, just for a point of clarification, we have an alderman absent now. So for the record, my record will show that Alderman McConnell is not present. That would be how we show when anybody leaves. So I have Alderman McConnell absent at this moment.
Then I would think that we will wait till Alderman McConnell comes back at this point in time. I will seek to get him back.
Can't force him back. You can talk to him. Did you attend that meeting in order to change the
And at this point, Alderman Simmons, you would be taking over the meeting because I do not have a mayor presiding. Thank you.
Well, that's interesting. My suggestion at this point would be for us to have about a 5-minute recess. Let the mayor accomplish what he wants, and then we'll come back in exactly 5 minutes, and we'll start the meeting at that point.
Mm-hmm. Call the meeting back to order. As Alderman McConnell.
So, Your Honor, so for my record, I will show that right now Alderman McConnell is absent from the meeting. When anybody steps out of the meeting for any minute of time, I show him absent in my meeting minutes, and that's noted, and it will be noted.
Then, Bill, I guess it's time.
Mr. Mayor, I just make the motion to table this particular issue until the next meeting, until we have a full board comprised of both.
There's been a motion made by...
Clarification, I believe you are wanting to postpone it to another meeting. To what date?
When there's a full board present.
I would not know that. We went through that
next
before.
Meeting.
Okay,
next meeting.
Thank you. That
yes,
would
ma'am.
Be the 28th.
Yes, ma'am.
I'll second that.
There's been a motion and a second. Do we need to vote on that?
Yes, please.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Please no. Vote as...
Your physical vote.
Push okay. The button.
Vote.
We need to re-vote?
No. It's not considered a second reading, so this vote is an approval to extend it on.
That's correct. And could we go to the vote, please, and we'll get that in the record.
Larry Melton, no. Brian Klontz, yes. Rick Castellon, no. Bill Skanes, yes. Bob Simmons, yes.
So, Your Honor, this item is now postponed to the January 28th, 2019 meeting.
Thank you. And there are several other items that are affected by this vote. which items are dependent on 18 and 19?
Your Honor, we have item number 18, which would be bill number 5676 is our next item. Should you want to do action on that, you may do that now, or I'll read it into the record.
Well, as a point of clarification, does not this pertain to the funding that obviously you can't pass something that you don't have any money to pay for?
Items 18 and 19, I believe.
I would motion that we postpone the final reading of bill number 5676 until the January 28th, 2020 meeting.
Second.
Please vote.
You could have a discussion on that motion if you'd like, and call for a vote. Thank you.
I'm assuming you want to vote. Please vote. Yes, 3, no, 2. Milton, no. Klontz, yes. Rick Castellon, no. Bill Skanes, yes. Bob Simmons, yes.
I'd also motion that we postpone the final reading of bill number 5677 until January 28th, 2020.
Second.
Motion been made and a second. All in favor?
No, I have a question, Lisa. Okay. On this. So are we just going to keep continuing this if Kelly walks out of the meeting?
I have a motion on the floor, and the motion will give me direction as to what to do with okay. The item.
Thank
and
you.
The vote is how we will proceed.
Any other questions? Please vote. Yes, 3, no, 2. Larry Milton, no. Brian Klontz, yes. Rick Castellon, no. Bill Skanes, yes. Bob Simmons, yes. Ready? Next item, Madam Clerk.
For the record, Your Honor, we're on item number 20. This is a first reading of bill number 5766, an ordinance amending Appendix A of the Branson Municipal Code pertaining to lodging establishment, swimming pools, and spas, and health and sanitation fees.
Excuse me. We have a staff report from Jamie Roush.
Excuse me. Ed, yeah. Should we bring Alderman McConnell back?
I don't know. He left without. I don't know. If he wants to come back, he can.
There he is. There he is.
Can I be back?
Yeah.
Thank you.
For the record, Alderman McConnell is now present.
Games.
Jamie.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the board. On October 31st, 2019, the Finance Committee approved a third-year phase-in for the fee schedule for the Health Department. Back in 2017, the third-year rollout was looked at and approved, and then essentially they increased their fees over time. We have Lisa Marshall. She's the director of the Health Department here to be able to answer any of your questions regarding the fees. We do approve this. Thank you so much. Recommend, not approve, sorry.
Good evening, I'm Lisa Marshall.
Before you start, Lisa, sure. Jamie, did you say recommend not approval?
No. I said we recommend instead of, because I originally said we approve this, and I meant we recommend this, so.
The budget.
Yes, sorry, misstatement.
Good evening. I'm Lisa Marshall with the Taney County Health Department. My address is 320 Reinhardt Road, Branson, Missouri. I'm just here to answer any questions that you all might have regarding our fee structure.
Alderman, have any questions? Anyone in the audience wishing to? Nope, we don't have that under this one, do we? Yeah, we do. Anyone in the audience wishing to speak regarding this matter? Municipal code for lodging establishments. Any aldermen have any questions? Yes.
You need to make a motion.
I do. Yeah. Thank you. Would you please have a motion to approve this item number 5766?
So move.
Oh, second.
Third.
All right. We have a motion and a second. And I've asked about the audience wishing to speak. Now the alderman. Anyone wishing to speak? Dr. Kwan.
So, Lisa, we reviewed this previously, and I think you clarified. I just want to make sure this is the proposed fees are in line with municipalities that are similar size and stature in terms of what you do in terms of health inspections.
Absolutely. What we did in 2017, we realized we had not taken a look at what it cost us to go out and do these inspections. And so in that process, we've got Appendix A here, which is our breakdown of our costs, and then we also called a lot of our neighboring counties, some larger counties, just to kind of get a perspective of what is being charged across the state for these inspections, and we're right in alignment with what's happening across our state.
Any other questions?
I can assure you that I know Lisa gave a full presentation to the Budget Finance Committee, and there was a lot of questions asked, and the Budget Committee was just 100% supportive of this.
All right. Any other comments? We have a motion and a second, so would you please vote? Yes, 6.
Thank you very much for your support. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Lisa. Item number 21, Madam Clerk, would you please present?
Your Honor, this is the first reading of bill number 5767, an ordinance amending the adopted 2020 budget for the City of Branson to adjust monies for the Public Safety Fund.
Begin with a staff report from Jamie Roush.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the board. These are a couple of items for the police department that did not get approved in the 2019. So essentially what needs to happen is we need to pull that money that was originally designed for that in last year's budget out of the reserve and then put it to 2020. Okay, so the first one would be the police department budgeted the $21,000 for the handheld analyzer as a capital item in 2019. That's $18,500. What we're recommending to do is to pull that money out of the unreserved fund balance as of the beginning of 2020 and put it back to their budget so that they can spend the monies, okay? And the second one is for the patrol ballistic rifle plates. So the total amount of that was $34,347,000. The money is accounted for through either the budget or donations there. So essentially that money goes down into the reserve fund at the end of 2019. So essentially for 2020 this year, we just need to pull it out of the reserve and put it to this account number so that they have that money to spend as needed.
So the net impact on the 2020 is 31,003.
essentially the net impact on 2020 would be the 34,000 and the 18,000, because what you will see is 2019, your ending balance will be larger because they did not get these approved to spend in 2019. So the monies that we had planned for just went down into the reserve. So your reserve will show these monies, and then we'll just pull them out, since this is January of 2020, to be used in 2020. It's a budget amendment. It's just moving budget dollars from the reserve to 2020 so that they can spend it now.
Essentially. You've heard the first reading of bill number 5767. Do I have a motion approving this bill?
So move.
Motion's been motioned.
Second.
Anyone in the audience wishing to speak to this item? Any alderman wishing to speak to this matter?
Just a quick, was this just an oversight?
No, I don't believe so. I believe this was on one of the meetings that was cut short. And so essentially we just, since it was so late in the year, it was dropped down into the reserve because we're working on year end right now. So 2019's over, we're closing that year end, so now we're at 2020. So the proper process is to pull that money out of the reserve balance and put it towards the 2020 balance.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other comments? Alderman Simmons.
Just to get this clear in my head, this was approved in the 2019 budget, and at the time we approved the 2020 budget, it was anticipated that this would be have already been spent.
Correct.
However, there are no carryovers, so when it wasn't spent, it had to go back into the reserve. And so now we're having to approve it again to go ahead and spend it in 2020.
And essentially, if the contract would have been passed, we would have had been able to encumber those funds, grab them, and just pull them over as an encumbrance. But since we did not have an approved vendor, we could not do that. So it just drops back down to the reserve. And then the following year, this is the process we have to do. So make sure everything's approved properly.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Please vote. Yes, six. Yes. Madam Clerk, please, would you present item 22?
Your Honor, this is the first reading bill number 5768, an ordinance approving a contract with Metrome USA to provide a handheld narcotics analyzer with maintenance services and authorize the mayor to execute the contract.
We have a report from Jeff Matthews.
Thanks, Mayor. Members of the board, we're seeking approval of the contract with Metrome USA to provide the handheld narcotics analyzer and maintenance services. This handheld narcotics analyzer will allow us to do presumptive testing on unknown substances, so that we can file charges, send them to the lab, figure out what they really are, and it allows the officers to do that without actually having to handle the substance. It's all an electronic device. We sent out three bids. We got three bids back. They range from $24,500. $29,900, and then the one that we're seeking approval on, $18,500. And to the question, Mr. Skeens, that you asked, we didn't have all the signed contracts back to get the timing that we wanted, and therefore what Ms. Roach said was actually true, but it was based on not only the timing, but the failure to get the contracts back signed from the vendors.
So thank you.
We request approval of this.
You've heard the reading of Bill 5768. Do I have a motion approving?
So move.
Second.
Any discussion? Anyone in the audience wishing to speak to this matter? Any alderman wishing to speak to this matter?
Yes, sir. I got a quick question. Chief, how many of these devices are we talking about?
Just one.
There's a need for more than one?
It would be nice, but right now we're happy with one if we can get it.
Other comments? Please vote. Yes, six. Passed. Item number 23, Madam Clerk, please.
Your Honor, this is the first reading, Bill number 5769, an ordinance approving a contract with Ed Rohr Safety Products Company to provide active shooter hostile event response kits and authorizing the mayor to execute the contract.
Staff report from Jeff Matthews.
Thanks, Mayor. Mayor and members of the board, this is one that's needed all across the industry. And this is a contract. We're requesting approval with Ed Rohr. They're the state bid vendor for this equipment. It will supply us 22 active shooter go bags, basically a rifle level 3 ballistic plated vest, helmet, and the carrier for the vest in a go bag. Excuse me, we can equip all of our patrol cars with. They're pretty expensive equipment. We had budgeted some money, and then a donation of $12,600 from Benefit the Badge picked up the rest and allowed us to go for the 22. And with your approval, that's what we will do and upfit all of our patrol units so that officers can face 21st century threats in the right order. We request approval.
You've heard the first reading of Bill 5769. Do I have a motion approving?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the audience wishing to speak to this item? Any alderman wishing to speak to this
item? Yes, sir. Chief, you know where I'm going with this.
Yes, sir.
$20,000 was public safety sales tax, sir.
Right. That plus the protective shell, that had me concerned. I spent time with the assistant chief, and what he had to wear was remarkable, the heaviness. This is the new type of shield that goes into that that weighs about a half of that weight or a quarter of that weight?
It's probably closer to a quarter. I think Lieutenant Hogue brought it up and allowed you to handle it. It's a lot lighter than what I wore years ago.
And that will be in every vehicle?
Every vehicle will be equipped with one of those. Yes, sir.
Makes it easier to sleep at night for me.
Any other comments? Please vote. Yes, 6. Approved. Item 24, Madam Clerk, would you please provide an introduction?
Your Honor, this is the first reading, Bill number 5770, an ordinance accepting a warranty deed for property from BH Land Company, LLC, pertaining to the Summit Ridge Residences subdivision, and authorizing the mayor to execute the acceptance of conveyance.
Staff report from Joe Hornickel.
Mayor, members of the board, just a little bit of house cleaning on this. You may recall last year in June that you all approved the final subdivision plat for the Summit Ridge Residence subdivision. That happens to be just a little bit west of the Recplex as part of the city's subdivision regulations. Based on the number of people that will be living in that subdivision, they were required to set aside a certain amount of open space or green space and then deed it to the city. They actually far exceeded the required amount to the tune of about 6 acres, as shown in this graphic in green. That's the area we're talking about. And so by your all's approval of the final plat, you accepted that area, that acreage of land for the city to accept. Now they're simply presenting the warranty deed to the city so we can get it recorded and then physically transfer the property from the current property owner to the city. Staff recommends approval. Happy to answer any questions.
You've heard the first reading of Bill 5770. Do I have a motion approving this bill?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Anyone in the audience wishing to speak to this item? Any alderman wishing to speak to this item? Alderman Simmons.
Joel, we're not setting a precedent here. These would still come up to us, different ones, one at a time. If somebody wanted to donate land to the city that was totally unsuitable for some reason, or perhaps included a drainage area, which this one does not, that needed to be maintained, we would still have the individual right to turn those down if they were not in the city's best interest.
I may get a little help from others, but the staff report this evening, the item that you're actually approving is the acceptance of conveyance, and that's the document that the county recorder actually requires in order for us to take a deed over there. So it prevents anybody from the public simply taking a deed over and transferring it to the city without some bit of acceptance or approval on the city's behalf.
This requirement is what is you're asking for. This is the protection that is provided to the board, and that's why it's coming before you. So we would have to have a conveyance document all the time.
But we would not, this would not set a precedent that would force us to accept any offered conveyance.
No.
Okay.
I mean, this, as you may recall, this particular piece of property went through vetting at the Planning Commission level, vetting at the Park Board level, as well as your level.
We're actually doing, Joel's doing one step to make sure you are approving that conveyance because it's already in the plat that has gone over. So now we're just officially conveying that deed to the city or accepting the conveyance of that deed to the city.
I have no qualms with this one, and we've seen it before, and I'm in full agreement with it. However, in thinking and looking at it and studying this, I can see there could be situations that the city would not want to accept a conveyance. There would be reasons that it was not in the city's best interest to do that.
Sure.
And so I'm merely asking, does this say that we now have to accept a conveyance, or does this still leave it that each individual case would be determined on its own merits?
We have to have this conveyance approved by the board.
So any future conveyance would also have to be approved by the board.
Yes.
You are correct.
Yes.
They can say yes or no.
Yes.
Thank
you. Yes. There's a statute that's requiring this, so that's protection to the city.
They can't just give it to us and say you're stuck with it.
Yeah.
For that, this reason.
The bottom line is we have to accept it or deny it. That's why it goes to the board for a vote.
Time to vote. Please vote. Yes, 6. It
Thank
passed.
You.
Item number 25, first reading of bill.
Your Honor, this is the first reading of bill number 5771, an ordinance accepting the proposal of Salvation Army pertaining to the provision of services to provide temporary public assistance and authorizing the mayor to execute the contract.
You've heard the first reading. We get a report from Ted Martin.
Good evening. This is a final request for temporary public assistance. As you recall, last year we did several other agencies by the Public Assistance Board that you set. This will be for an amount of $12,000 for the Salvation Army. It's reimbursable amounts for emergency sheltering for Branson residents. The staff recommends approval. I'll be available to answer any questions.
Thank you. You've heard Mr. Martin's comments. You heard the reading. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Anyone in the audience wishing to speak to this item? Any alderman wishing to speak to this item?
Just a quick question. Ted, what held this up? Was it their board had to approve the...
As I recall, the clerk may clarify, I believe it goes to St. Louis?
Chicago.
Chicago, some big city for their approval, their legal review.
And this is a cost reimbursement instead of advance contracts.
It's the same as all of them, where cost reimbursements is the exact same. We're just, they always lag. We know that, so.
Thank you. Finance department audits that throughout.
Alderman Gaston?
Ted, I just have a question on this. So I've been seeing on social media the last couple of days that they aren't getting volunteers for opening. Have you seen that?
Yes.
They've been closed for the last couple of days when it was below 32 degrees.
Oh, boy.
I was sure. I publicly pushed that out a little bit, as other people have, that they need volunteer support. They have to keep a male and a female on site. So the captain is a female, Captain Linda, and to get a male volunteer in has been a challenge, and extra support when it runs more than one day. So that's the third-party information. Now, this specifically goes towards her partners with area lodging facilities, and they do a voucher to the, as I recall, to the motel, and then they usually pay that within the next week and then request whatever her schedule is back to the city for reimbursement. It's not the shelter in the building itself.
So my next question on that's going to be, is this money going towards the weekly stay hotels?
I'm not sure who. She's got four or five different motels that they have a partnership that will accept, keyword, the vouchers from Salvation Army.
Okay. And I'm sorry I didn't call you in advance and ask you these. I've been busy. So, but I mean, it's one of my concerns is if we're just going to keep supplying money to the weekly hotels, I've got problems with that. And I mean, $12,000 is a lot of money that we could give to the weekly hotels when it's $150 to stay there.
On the voucher, it's a identified amount that the Salvation Army agrees to by their agreement. So it's not like they choose $30 motels one night, $150 motels the next night. As I understand it, it's done by a voucher amount for this program. Jamie, does that sound right on what you've seen, reimbursements?
I just wish some way we could put in here that it can't go back to the weekly hotels. I mean, I know we can't, but that's just a heartburn of mine that we're just keep supplying these weekly hotels to stay open.
I just have one question for it, and it relates back to what Rick said. Do we have anything built into the contract? This may be a question back towards Stan, that these individuals would not be referred towards those facilities that we've deemed to be unhealthy to put them in the first place?
The vast majority of them that you might be referring to are now closed, but the Salvation Army has a criteria that they have to follow regarding the facility that someone stays in. So yes, they have to be on the approved list. And secondly, and probably something that I don't think Ted did mention, is they only give these vouchers to somebody temporarily. They don't get to come back over time and keep going back and back.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments? Please vote.
Excuse me.
Yes, 6 votes. Approved.
Do we need a second read on this one? Okay.
Item number 26. Madam Clerk, would you please provide the introduction to this item?
Your Honor, this is a first reading bill number 5772, an ordinance approving a contract with S&S Pumping Incorporated to accept holding tank and special waste for treatment at the Branson Wastewater Treatment Facilities and authorize the mayor to execute the contract.
Again, with a staff report from Mike Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the board. Following requirements outlined in the Branson Municipal Code 9035, the Utilities Department currently allows area septic haulers to deliver domestic waste to the Branson Wastewater Treatment Plants for treatment. This waste is collected from small treatment plants, septic tanks in Stone and Taney counties. If approved, S&S will deliver approximately 1.3 million gallons of material to the facilities in 2020. Branson has provided this service since 2002. There have been no adverse effects to the treatment plant. It's actually a benefit to the community and to the environment. The 2020 fee structure of $9.45 per thousand as charged for the holding tank waste and $19.97 per thousand for the septic and sludge waste is adequate revenue to cover the cost of the treatment. The proposed contract and established fee structure was reviewed by the Budget and Finance Committee on December the 6th, 2019. The committee voted and recommended to submit this item to the Board of Aldermen for consideration. Staff recommends approval of the bill.
You've heard the first reading of Bill 5772. Do I have a motion approving?
So moved. Second.
Second. Anyone in the audience wishing to speak to this item? Any aldermen wishing to speak to this item?
Got a quick question. Mike, I was in sort of thought and trying to follow you as you took me through the process when you and I visited the plant in the first place. How often do these trucks deliver? Is this daily, weekly?
Typically, it's on a daily basis. They may do one load, two loads in a day. They may skip a day. It's intermittent.
Okay.
Any other questions? Please vote. Result of vote, yes, 6, approved. Item number 27. Madam Clerk, please provide the introduction for this item.
Your Honor, this is a first reading bill number 5773, an ordinance authorizing an agreement with SW Missouri Engineering LLC, DBA Cochran, for professional design services for replacement of the lift station number 17, Force Main, and authorizing the mayor to execute the contract.
Again, the staff report from Mike Ray.
As a part of our water and sewer capital improvement program, staff recently advertised an RFP for the design and engineering of a replacement force main for city lift station number 17. The lift station 17 is located on Thelma Doyle Drive, which is just north of Fall Creek Road and just east of Highway 165. This facility is used to convey sewage that's collected primarily in the Fall Creek watershed through an existing 3,600-foot, 12-inch PVC force main to a gravity manhole that's located on Dakota Road. Some of the history on this project is the original lift station 17 and associated force main that we're discussing was installed in the early 1990s by private development to convey wastewater flows through a series of three small lift stations that were located in that area. These assets were transferred to the city shortly after construction, and city staff assumed responsibility for operation and maintenance of the equipment. Numerous operational issues with the existing stations and increased flows from development in the Southwest Branson required the city to begin making upgrades to these systems by the year 2000. The construction of two new higher capacity lift stations to replace the three station series was completed in 2003. Due to budget constraints, the new stations were connected to the existing 12-inch PVC force main that was previously installed by the development. After connection of the new stations, numerous failures began to occur in the existing force main due to the higher operating pressures. Improved operational features were designed and installed at the stations by city staff, which reduced the frequency of the line breaks, but some spills continued to occur. Although the breaks were less frequent and less excessive, the Missouri Department of Natural Resources did issue us a letter in 2014 requiring that we put a plan in place to address the matter. City staff responded to DNR and included items to make additional improvements to the existing alarm features, the pumping equipment, and the pumping functions at those stations. The latest improvements and an addition of an equalization basin at in the Fall Creek watershed has given us the ability to greatly reduce the potential for spills, but with the condition of the line, the potential does still exist. To fully correct the force main situation, staff recommends proceeding with an engineering contract for design for replacement of the 12-inch PVC force main with material such as ductile iron or something heavier to be able to withstand the pressure that's created by the pumping systems at the station. It's also clear that the proper pipe bedding was not installed when these lines were first laid. Large rock has been observed in contact with the pipe during several of the excavations for repair. The alignment of the new main will also need to differ from the existing route. It is a very difficult access through a very deep valley, and also we would have to keep the high-capacity station in operation while we lay the new line, so we would have to be installing the new force main away from the existing line. The new force main would also have a distance of about 3,800 feet. So steps for the design of this project was described in Request for Proposal 2495-25. The RFP identified what criteria firms would need to provide for the city to evaluate and select the best qualifying candidate. At least 5 references were also required for similar work completed within the last 5 years. 12 firms did submit proposals. Staff met with each of the firms individually and interviewed them and also gave them information as to what we would expect. So we did meet with each firm so they could fully understand the expectations of the project. Staff then formed an evaluation team when the proposals were received, and we first scored those individually and then met to compare the rankings. And after discussions and opinions, the staff team recommends that Cochran Engineering is the top scorekeeper for the project. Cochran's proposal was very detailed. The firm is also highly experienced in the type of work performed. Comments from the references provided by Cochran indicate that the firm has been extremely interactive with the customer, and they build strong working relationships with their clients. On August the 28th, 2019, staff submitted the proposal evaluation information along with the RFP and the individual proposals to the Capital Improvements Committee. After review and discussion of the information, the committee unanimously agreed that the evaluation team selection agreed with that selection and voted to direct staff to negotiate a contract with Cochran for consideration of the board. Staff met with Cochran Engineering to form a detailed scope of work outlining the tasks that Cochran would perform to make the improvements. A price to perform the work was negotiated at a not to exceed $77,720 for the engineering. This is within the staff's budgeted estimate for the cost of the engineering for this project, and it also falls within the guidelines of qualification-based selections that we now go by when determining professional services. Funds are available in the 2020 fiscal budget for this expense, and staff recommends approval of the bill.
You've heard the first reading of Bill 5773 and a report from Mike Ray. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Anyone in the audience wishing to speak to this matter? Any alderman wishing to speak to this matter?
Yes, sir. I have one question. Mike, this has been facilitated by a letter from DNR noting deficiencies. Was I correct on that?
Yes, we did receive a letter in 2014. It has been a substantial amount of time. We have had to make several more improvements in the stations to get us to the point to where DNR has a little bit of a comfort, and then they did allow us some time to move this project up in the priority of our capital improvement program, and we have reached that point now to at least the engineering.
Thank you.
Any other aldermen? Yes.
Mike, the total contract is $77,720. On page 5 of the contract, the design work is $66,000 and materials are $11,500.
The total design for the all phases is $66,000. And then there is a phase of construction support when the project is let. If we decide to construct this project, then Cochran Engineering staff will provide inspections and submittal evaluations for the materials. That cost is $11,000, bringing the total cost to $77,720.
Yeah, that's just for the design work, right?
$66,245 is for the design work. $11,475 is for the construction support.
Construction support, is there going to be construction cost on top of that, or is that construction support?
Yes. The construction will be bid at a later date after the project is fully designed. Then we would bring that project to the board to see if we want to proceed with construction. Estimated construction cost of that force main is going to be $650,000 to $700,000.
So how much?
$650,000 to $700,000 to replace that. The $11,000 would be to help us through the process of making sure the contractor is submitting the right materials, installing everything right, bedding is proper, that support would be.
Is that $600,000 to $700,000, is that already in your budget for this year?
That is not. That would be in 2021. We would not construct that this year. And we would go through the priority-based budgeting process to determine if we want to proceed in 2021 with the construction of this. This is just for engineering.
Thank you, Mike.
Any other discussion? Please vote.
We'll maybe digging ditches.
Yes, 6, motion passed. Item number 28, Madam Clerk, would you please provide the introduction?
Your Honor, this is the first reading of Bill Number 5774, an ordinance authorizing an agreement with SW Missouri Engineering LLC, DBA Cochran, for professional design services to engineer upgrades to the Spring Creek water and sewer systems, and authorizing the mayor to execute the contract.
Begin with a staff report from Mike Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Along with the request for proposal that went out for Lift Station 17, we also included items to look at engineering for improvements to the water system that's currently served for Spring Creek subdivision and also the sewer system. Gives you some history on that also. It's rather lengthy, so bear with me. The Spring Creek Water Distribution System. Spring Creek Residential Subdivision is located outside of the adjacent and adjacent to the Branson city limits. It's currently provided water and sewer service by the city of Branson. In 2004, the private groundwater well was used to provide water to the subdivision was found to have a bacterial contamination. At the time, the Property Owners Association for this subdivision and representatives from the Missouri Department of Natural Resources approached the city for the possibility of the city providing water service to this area. An arrangement was made in 2006 to extend a 2-inch domestic water line from the nearby city main to the existing subdivision's water distribution system. A master water meter was installed between the systems to measure the total amount of water that was supplied to the subdivision. The Property Owners Association also installed individual water meters at each residence, and the city agreed to read the individual water meters monthly for billing purposes. The residents agreed to pay their individual water bills, and the association agreed to pay for the amount of water use through the master meter that exceeded the total sum of the individual meters. This arrangement worked for a period of time, however, the association was eventually dissolved, leaving no contact for the city to conduct business. Frequent leaks now occur within the subdivision's private lines. Water leaks that form in lines between the city's master meter and the individual customer meters are going unprepared for long periods of time, resulting in substantial water loss and water bills amounting in the thousands of dollars. The residents are unable to pay that amount. Water termination was discussed for the subdivision. However, the residents do pay the individual water bills for their individual properties. Staff researched options to upgrade the existing system that's in Spring Creek by extending new public water mains through the Spring Creek subdivision. The Spring Creek neighborhood would definitely benefit. There would be additional benefit to the Palace View development to the west of Spring Creek by looping the existing water mains in that area, thus providing a redundant feed to Palace View, which does not exist right now. The improvements could also be utilized to supply water to annexed areas on the east side of Spring Creek that are currently annexed but unserved by city water. The improvements would not only benefit Spring Creek, but if we did this, I think it would be only right that it would be a community benefit and provide better water service and fire protection to all areas in that region. Staff recommends proceeding with necessary engineering to make the improvements that would correct the previous Spring Creek arrangements and at the same time enhance the overall city water distribution service in and around that neighborhood. the sewer system. The existing sewer lines within Spring Creek consist of residential type 4-inch pipes that are not accessible by city maintenance equipment. The existing Spring Creek system was connected to the city central sewer at a single point of connection through a county-funded project in 2005. The intent was for the Spring Creek property owners to maintain the sewers within the subdivision, and the city would be responsible to accept sewer treatment flows for treatment. The sewer agreement that exists, as we cannot find, does not clearly explain the responsibility of maintenance, and no recording was imposed on the individual property deeds identifying that maintenance responsibility. And as I mentioned before, the association that would have been responsible for that maintenance no longer exists. Given the fact that the sewer system inside the subdivision serves multiple individual properties, Missouri Department of Natural Resources will consider the subdivision sewer system public, and the responsibility of repair will fall on the city when future problems occur, and no doubt it will. And we have been through this situation before where we had to actually go in and revamp a sewer collection system already that was under a similar agreement, and Missouri Department of Natural Resources made the determination that we were responsible. If it's decided to proceed with the design to upgrade the system's water system, then staff recommends proceeding with design to replace the existing sewer system within the subdivision at the same time with a gravity public system that meets current city design standards and is easily accessed by city crews and city equipment. We did follow the same process for review of the proposals for the engineering companies. Cochran is also our recommendation. We did take the proposals to the Capital Improvements Committee, and then the same vote for Lift Station 17, and it was approved to send to you all for consideration. We have made available funds in the 2020 budget for both phases of this project. A contract of $92,647 was negotiated with Cochran Engineering. The water portion of that is $57,728. The sewer portion of that is $34,919. Staff recommends approval of the bill.
You've heard the first reading of Bill 5774 and the report from Mike Ray. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Seconds there. Anyone in the audience wishing to speak to this matter? Any alderman?
Yes, sir. I got a question. Mike, you said a word that struck a little bit of fear in my heart, and it may have been in Alderman Klontz. That's the use of bacteria in the well. That well has no longer been used and taken offline.
That's correct.
We have an assurance that nobody will utilize that. Yes. That must be fecal material.
I believe it was a Department of Natural Resources requirement that well be abandoned properly.
Okay. Was this the one that we talked about earlier where the residents were complaining about these trucks moving back and forth across them, and this was an issue on private land that we were dealing with, and somebody, oh God, it's been a long time, but this was last summer, I believe, the discussions were. Because we had a gentleman come here before us that said there were trucks moving back in front of them.
I believe that was probably a different issue.
Same zoning.
Okay.
Different issue, same property.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, Alderman.
Okay. Any other? Yes, Dr. Clark.
So some of this would affect properties that are not annexed currently.
That is correct.
Is that correct?
This subdivision is not annexed in the city.
So would these property owners have to concede to annexation?
That would be a board decision. If the board wished to annex that area, then yes, they would have to do that. I might say that in the meetings that we have had, it would probably be their desire to annex, as they would like to do that. But it would be this board's decision.
Mr. Mayor, following up on that, when would be the right time to make that decision? If we're going to incur those costs, it seems there need to be some sort of reciprocal action on their behalf to come in within the city limits.
There may be other avenues to explore there, such as city roads, police protection, fire protection, other things to consider.
But we wouldn't put ourselves in a position of forcing those property owners to annex.
Normally, under a if you're to receive water or sewer service from the city, the board does have the right to require them to annex, or the board can do a water or sewer connection agreement that at some time in the future, if the board desired to annex in the future, you could do so. Normally, it is one or the other is required of the property owner.
Again, the engineering is $92,600.
Yes.
Estimated construction cost?
This one is a little harder to guess at, but I don't have an engineer's estimate. This one is a little harder to evaluate. We are estimating in the $950,000 range for both water and sewer if we do them simultaneously. It would be more to put in the water system and then try to come back later and put in the sewer system.
And is that amount in the budget?
No, that would also be a 2021, and it would go through the priority-based budgeting process. This would be engineering only.
Where's all this money coming from?
It will be present if the board chooses to spend it. It comes from the rates that we have, along with the infrastructure comes from some tourism tax. I think one of the items that I'm not sure, I think I heard Mike say it, but what's somewhat troublesome with this, and it's another one of those islands, is that the Department of Natural Resources said, guess what? You entered into an agreement with them. This is your responsibility now.
So between this item and the last item, we're at $1.6 million.
Yes.
DNR says, yeah.
And it's not that we're committed to do that right now, but I mean, if finance says that the money is available, then we would recommend it to you. But if it doesn't even get past that point, if there's no money to do it with, then we would stop in engineering. I might point out, too, that the sewer-related projects, the previous one, Lift Station 17, the Force Main, we submitted $1.68 million in projects for 2020 to the county commission. And they have tentatively approved $1 million to Branson to help cover the cost of those. Now, all of that 1.68 is budgeted in our budget, and we have funds available. But we will get $1 million of everything that we do this year, which we can submit the engineering for this project under that, and the engineering for Lift Station 17 under that. So we will get those funds back. So those funds will return to our coffers and be available for other use, for other projects, possibly for construction of one of these projects at least.
These two projects is $1.6 million, and DNR is telling us we have to do these, right? So just begs the question,
is DNR going to fund any of it too?
Well, no, the question was going to be, would this be a higher priority of the spend of our money than the 76 project?
The money for this project will be taken care of. The $1.5 million for the 76 project is now dedicated to that project. Neither of them is a higher priority because this project won't get done until 2021 or 2022. It's just we know we have to do it. It has to be planned for, and the design has to occur before you can go forward with the project. The money will be present.
it's not like that $1.5 million is going to sit there or disappear. It's, you're trying to calculate a one-time expense on an ongoing expense, and with this, not only are you going to spend $1.6 million, you're going to have to maintain it forever. That's why it's tied into our rate structure, because if you don't, you're going to run out of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand that part. But the 76 project is a one-time expense, and these two bills are a one-time expense. I understand these come with, well, the construction. The engineering and construction is a one-time expense. Then there's maintenance of it. Okay. It's just these kind of conversations just keep reinforcing in my brain, are we prioritizing our dollars?
Mr. Simmons.
Mike, you, this, of course, is mostly due to the unincorporated area, or the area that's not in the city. However, part of this is to part of Spring Creek out there that is in the city limits and is going to encourage development, housing development, residences, which we need in that area, is it not?
There are annexed areas on the right side of the screen that developers have approached us in the past few years for development, but there's no water service there. It's quite expensive for them to put in water, so I don't know if that's why they did decided not to develop it, but it was a question that was brought up.
But we do have unserved areas in the city, and this project, in addition to what it's originally doing, would also serve those unserved areas and make them more suitable for development.
Yes, it would.
Yeah. Mr. Mayor, may I ask just one thing, and this is back to both of them. It seems to be incumbent upon us, if we're going to spend almost $1 million on a water and sewer project, that we have discussions with that group to bring them in and get them out of the island situation with the city of Branson. That's just my opinion. One voice is all.
All right. Any other comments? Sensing you want to vote, please vote. Yes, 5, no, 1. Yes, McConnell. Yes, Milton. Yes, Brian Klontz. No, Rick Castellan. Yes, Bill Skaines. Yes, Bob Simmons. Passes. Item 29, Madam Clerk, would you please read the introduction?
Your Honor, this is the first reading of Bill Number 5775, an ordinance amending Appendix A of the Branson Municipal Code pertaining to utilities fee schedule.
Begin with a staff report from Mike Ray.
Mr. Mayor, for fiscal year 2020, staff recommended a 2% water rate adjustment. An ordinance document with rate amounts incorrectly reflecting a 5% increase was attached by error to the water rate adjustment staff report for the November 12, 2019 Board of Aldermen meeting. This error was not identified until after final approval of the bill and signing of the document. This item is for a correction to lower the water rate amount to the 2% increase, which was requested and approved by the Board of Aldermen on final reading on November the 26th, 2019. The corrected water rate adjustment outlined in the attached corrected ordinance will become effective upon the first billing period in January of 2020. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
You've heard the reading of the bill and the report from Mike Ray. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Motion been made. Is there a second?
Second.
Second's been made. Anyone in the audience wishing to speak to this item? Any alderman wishing to speak to this item? Sensing you want to vote, all vote, please. Yes, 6. It passes.
Thank you.
Item number 30 is the next items are appointments. The appointment process is in accordance with the Board of and Committee Appointments Procedure. I am requested to the following appointments be made for Category 5, in which the Board votes. I'm recommending that Jerry Jeske be reappointed to the Historical Downtown Branson CID Board with a term expiring April 18, 2024, recommending a reappointment to the Historical Downtown CID Board of Tom Motley with his term expiring April 18, 2024. Do I have a motion to approve the appointment of this listed Category 5?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Please vote. Yes, 6. It passes. Item 31. The next item is to review the disbursements October 17, 2019 through November 15, 2019. Are there any questions regarding the disbursements? Do I have a motion to acknowledge the receipt of the disbursements from October 17, 2019 through November 15, 2019?
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Any discussion? Please vote. Yes, 6. Motion passed. The next item is reports from individual aldermen with Alderman McConnell.
So I was recently asked by a constituent in Ward 3 how the mayor was able to change the vote, the abstention, to no vote. I asked our city attorney, Chris Lebeck, to explain the site, the Branson Municipal Code. He answered me and copied the entire Board of Aldermen, but said that because he marked the email confidential attorney-client privileged, I was not permitted to share the answer with the very individual who asked me the question. As a matter of fact, in a memo dated December 13th, Chris wrote, a member of the board violated their duties and obligations to the board and the city by knowingly disclosing this privileged attorney-client communication to Mr. Grohman without permission of the board to do so. He wanted to say, to protect our communications, I've asked and received approval to turn off auto-forwarding for all aldermanbranson.gov, bransonmo.gov email addresses. In the future, all communications from my department will only go to bransonmo.gov email addresses where they will terminate. Lastly, he wrote, in the interest of security and continuity, it is important that we protect privileged communications by keeping them internal to the city of Branson. I read that to say no transparency. I'm quite certain that all 6 aldermen sitting up here tonight would approve of answering a municipal code question that was asked by a constituent. So after receiving my reprimand from the city attorney, I decided to get outside legal opinion from a trusted law firm with considerably more municipal law experience than our city attorney. And do you know what I was told? As elected officials, we each decide what is confidential attorney-client privilege, not the city attorney. Otherwise, he could send us his grocery list and slap privileged on it, and we have to treat it as confidential. Absolutely not. The decision is up to each member of the board, not the person working for the board. Of course, if we share proprietary information on the sale of a business or something that adversely affects the city, an individual, or business, we would be responsible for that damage. But an answer of municipal code? Absolutely not. Now, before anybody on the board says that we shouldn't question our city attorney, I would remind you about a recent staff recommendation on using tourism tax, which is designed for infrastructure for sports fields. That was a recommendation by our staff. It took the old seagull, a.k.a. Gary Grohman, to remind our board this would be against the law to use the funds this way. Our city attorney ultimately agreed. And how do we thank Mr. Grohman for his contribution of keeping us out of legal trouble? The city attorney accused him of offering pro bono legal advice to the board. As a matter of fact, Gary was searched by our city staff all the way back to 1973 in the state of Illinois, where he actually did practice law. Gary never presented himself as an attorney to this board. No business cards, no office hours, nothing. It is time we stop attempting to conduct city business behind closed doors. It is the people's business, and I will continue to seek input and inform, where appropriate, those who are really in charge, the citizens and residents of Branson. Finally, I've heard that some board members have been criticized for fighting and that we should all just get along. Let me be clear. If people get upset because 3 board members walk out of a meeting in protest after the mayor changes the rules of abstention behind their backs with the assistance of the city attorney, then Ward 3 elected the wrong alderman. I will never trade kumbaya or comfort for bad policy and a lack of transparency. That's my report, Mayor.
Alderman Klotz?
Nothing to report.
Alderman Simmons?
No report, Mr. Mayor.
Alderman Skaines?
Yes, sir. There's a few items. I serve as the board's representative to the airport over at Graham Clark. They received a very large grant from MoDOT to totally work the landing strip to bring it up to conditions where it doesn't look like this all the way down through there. And they actually showed a gain of $17,000 at the end of the year versus $12,529 in 2018. The amount of demand in the second half of the year was pretty significantly up from where it was. I'd like to give kudos to our fire department on this issue of the water rescue go bags and whatever else that you have and the equipment, and you guys for being on top of that. And the community needs it, guys. We all know that. The last few days, I got a lot of feedback from constituents, and I conveyed that on to Joel about our signed ordinance that people are seem to be quite pleased with the changes that we made. It took us about a year to get it done, but it's done, and I think that kudos go to Planning and Zoning and Joel's staff for this implementation. There seems to be a better atmosphere of cooperation, and I think the community likes that. On a sadder note, my neighbor Terry Sanders' son was killed in a car wreck this last Friday night, and they will have his service, I believe, Saturday. I would just encourage people of this community to support. Terry Sanders has been there for us in the community. I've known and held that child as almost a baby, and it is very disturbing that that happened. On the very end of it, and I wish the Chamber / CVB people would stay in here, that I'm very much support of the board giving an official position, calling it what it is, and it's Ozark Mountain Christmas. I do understand that we are America's Christmas tree city, but we're known for Ozark Mountain Christmas, and I hate abandoning that to no end. I mean, we can be Ozark Mountain Christmas, home of America's Christmas tree city or something, but I don't want to see us give up on something that I personally was working on 30 years ago. And that's the end of my report, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Alderman Milton.
I just want to reiterate my concerns about the finances with the city. Mike, you're doing a great job, and I know what the projects you're coming up with are needed projects. I just remain concerned about, I mean, I see the monies we have, and I see what our forecasts are. I just don't see where these needed monies, funds are coming from. So I just wanted to be back on the record.
Alderman Castellan?
No report.
Administrator Dobbins?
No report, Mr. Mayor.
From my report, continuing to press to seek funding for the protection for the sewer treatment plant. Made a trip to Jefferson City and visited with Senator Sater and Representative Justice. Visited with Rob Dixon, who is the director of the Department of Missouri Economic Development. There are lots of things going on. We talked about our legislative agenda and where the status of that is. We'll continue to report, and we'll have an update on that. I think it's important that we seek sources of funds. What I heard in some of the reports tonight, like Mike's report is that going to the county to seek additional funds for part of the projects to reduce the cost to the city. It's important that we look at our finances and set the priorities. And at this point in time, we seem to be not sure what those priorities are. So maybe I can focus on trying to get some agreement of priorities where they should be. At this point in time, there's an adjournment for an executive session. Do I have a motion to go into closed executive session?
So moved.
We.
I move we go into closed executive session pursuant to 610.021.2 RSMO for real estate and 610.21.3 RSMO for personnel.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Please vote. Result of the vote is 6 yes. Approved. Adjournment process. Do I have a motion to adjourn the Board of Aldermen meeting?
Come on, Rick. That's yours.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and second. Call for a vote. You want to do that electronically?
Please. Okay.
Yes, 6. Approved. Thank you for your attendance this evening. Thank you for being here.
See you, Mike. See you guys.